This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Shahriz Abdullah and Wong Shaoning on today, Friday the 21st of June. Good morning, guys. Are you enjoying your Friday so far?
I will enjoy my Friday.
After the show is over, is
it? After the show is over. But for now, I'll be having fun with you guys.
I'm just glad it's Friday. You know, the week passed so fast, though. It's amazing.
It really did. And do you have any plans for the weekend?
Eat, sleep, and repeat.
Nice.
What about you, Shahriz?
No plans yet. I haven't had the time to plan. So we'll be planning after the show. So stay tuned.
No, I forgot. Eat, sleep, run, repeat. In that order.
Sensi, like you.
Yeah, so, well, but before that, we have a full show for you and lots of fascinating discussions. So we're going to be talking about lots of interesting things in this particular hour, because we're going to be covering the lighter side of serious business. So what do we have on the agenda for today?
Well, I'll be talking about names, you know. Are we too sensitive about names nowadays and too politically correct? And maybe just sometimes we choose a name because it just sounds nice.
Nice. Okay. And we also have a Malaysian, a 21-year-old Malaysian who has just won an award for her architecture design, which could help disaster management. So we'll be discussing about Malaysian successes abroad.
Excellent stuff. And of course, if you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do come talk to us. We want to hear what you think, and we'll take a look at some messages later on in the show. Now, up next, we're going to be talking about the horrors of the social media like button. But first, Masha Boom by Feist, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was a little less conversation by Elvis Presley, but you know what? We're going to have a little more conversation for you here on The Morning Run with Lynn, Shahriz and Shaoning.
Now, if you've pun intended, right?
None at all. Now, if you've spent any time on social media whatsoever over the past 10 years, you'll recognize the little blue and white thumbs up symbol as a like button. And oftentimes, the number of likes you get is more than the number of comments. And that's because Facebook has essentially, with the like button, reduced engagements to a single click. It's very easy and even can be very addictive.
Yeah, so those were the good old days, isn't it? When, I used to use those like buttons when I was still very new in Facebook. That was, what, about 8?
You don't use them anymore?
I don't.
They're still there.
I don't, because it's swayed from what it was intended to do.
It was something quite innocent when it was first
very
started,
innocent.
Right?
It was about connecting people. But now it's just dividing people, isn't it? People are just fighting over, on Facebook about issues and so forth. So it's no longer a fun place. Not that I do enjoy a good debate once in a while, but Facebook was just not, the place for it. It used to be where I see a photo I like of a friend of mine or, where they've been, and I'll like it. But now people are just putting, just opinion pieces, and, you have...
It's like an op-ed every few minutes.
Every few minutes. And, it's scary that all this data that they're collecting, Facebook could abuse it. So, yeah.
No, I think what's interesting was, like we said, it just started out very innocently. And I think people who do put their pictures up are also quite innocent in that they just want people to admire their work, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a cute picture or some cake they make. It's human nature that you want everyone to like you. So you get kind of disappointed when you don't get enough likes, right?
Yeah.
And then you kind of think, am I not worth it? What's wrong with my cake? Does it look bad?
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely the addictive side of social media, right? Because we are constantly seeking validation, essentially. And so especially when you are putting your work, whether it's your baking, whether it's perhaps something you've drawn or something that you've written, perhaps an article, you want to see that response from people. And there's this interesting article on the BBC about this, because the person, it centres around this person who creates comics. And when she initially started creating comics, she would get likes on her work, and she found it very rewarding. And after time, Facebook changed its algorithms, and she started getting less likes, and she felt, and I quote, like she was being starved of oxygen. So she would actually go out and buy ad space, things to boost up her likes, just so that she could maintain that status that she'd achieved. The irony of it was, of course, that she was one of the Facebook developers who developed the like button. So she got caught, essentially, by her own creation.
Yeah, and this led to, you know, the rise of influencers as well, I reckon. Whatever that they do, they need validation, and eventually, they can make money out of it. But what I find fascinating about this article is that, again, is that evolution of what Facebook and how fast technology has changed. Mm. As you mentioned, initially it was about comments, and then after that, with likes, you get more validation. And now you could see that people are moving away from Facebook. So in Facebook, is, you know, whether or not they've come out with anything new and so forth, a lot of millennials, there are articles out there that suggest that, you know, they are moving away from Facebook. They're going for something else. They're, you know, and whether or not Facebook is going to be relevant anymore.
But I think what's really scary is that innocence when you click a like, and what message are you sending, and what data are you sending Facebook, right? Because they've done some studies and found that from the type of things you like, they pretty much can suss out your whole personality, your hobbies, your dislikes, your political views, whether you're feminist, liberal, whether you're, you know, you're conservative, what is your religion, everything. Every little detail about you is mapped. And I find that extremely scary.
Yeah, I think because when you go through it, it's kind of an opaque system, because when you scroll through your newsfeed and you see a post that you like, and say it's a cat video, okay, you think, oh, that's cute, and you press like, and then you move on. But you don't think about how many things you like, what kind of things they are, and the total picture that your likes are painting of you that Facebook has access to. Because originally, when the like button was introduced, app developers could actually access that data of the things that you'd liked. And it could, you know, we've talked a little bit about how they could use that to target ads, for example. Since then, because of the concerns about data privacy, some of which we're talking about today, Facebook has restricted the access to that data. So a lot of app developers now cannot see that data, but Facebook still can. So there have been researchers who've said that, okay, you know, if you have access to all of that data, say you like 70 things, 70 posts, someone who knows how to read that data would actually know you better than a lot of your friends. If you like 300 posts, then the argument is that they'd actually be able to know you better than your partner. So that's how pervasive and how detailed your like data can be for corporations like Facebook to use. And they can not only use it for targeting ads, they can also use it to foster your own little echo chamber, right? Because they want to encourage you to talk more and to post more, because then you use their platform more.
Exactly, because they'll just tailor-make all the newsfeed that you want. And then all your friends share that same newsfeed again and again and again. And at the end of the day, guys, it's all about Facebook making maximum amount of money.
Oh, that's right.
Well, let us know what you think. Would you get rid of the like button? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a couple of messages coming up, and then what's in a name? So BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Think I'm in Love by Beck. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharit and Xiaoning. Now, the Chinese government has asked several hotel chains to change the names of their hotels so they don't reflect, and I quote, a worship of foreign things. Now, these include the Vienna Hotel, the Heidelberg Hotel, and the Victoria Hotel. And this, of course, has caused a little bit of an uproar, because some of these hotels, you know, understandably, have paid for their licenses through 2025, and they have a right to use their names. But it does make you wonder why the Chinese government has decided to do this. I mean, worship, what does it mean that these hotels with foreign names may be worshipping foreign things?
Yeah, so I mean, just when you thought that Chinese government, you know, being more open with their businesses, so this is another step back. I don't understand how, you know, whether or not the government should dive into businesses at this level. Because at the end of the day, businesses know their target customers better than the government. And they have reasons. Why they name their, you know, it's part of branding, and again, it's very. Yeah, I don't quite understand why they would want to intervene in at such level, really.
I don't know. Are these governments, the Chinese government, reading too much into this name? After all, it's very common for places to be called some after some other place. I mean, even in KL, right, we have Andalusia, Pantai Hill Park, and that's nowhere near Spain, but, you know, it's called, it looks a little bit like Andalusia, the colours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then in Bangsa, there's a Tuscany apartment, and we are nowhere near Italy either, but hey, it's Tuscany in Bangsa too.
I guess they're trying to tap into, like, the romantic ideas of these places, right? So
yeah.
Paris hotels, you know, the Seine, Tuscany. There's this image of a relaxing holiday almost that comes with the name of the city. So yeah,
and
I can
maybe
understand.
There's no agenda beyond that, actually. And it's just a name,
and it adds cultural diversity, at least for me, because when you want Malaysia to be a global center, a global hub, and you want to attract a lot of tourists, and sometimes tourists like it when they have something to relate to. Again, it adds to the color of the city and how diverse and how accepting they are of of other cultures from around the world.
No, but even in this article, right, one of the names that was, like, you know, kind of looked down upon was the name Victoria Hotel. Mm-hmm. Guess what, guys? I Googled. There's about a dozen service apartments in Kuala Lumpur who are also called Victoria something or other. It's such a common name. I mean, why do you want to clamp down on something like that?
There is also the point of view that this is coming particularly as the trade war is ramping up. So you're seeing, you know, this tensions between the US and China. So China may be not feeling very charitable towards anything with a sort of a Western tilt at the moment. Hence the reason for this. But they've also pointed out that imperial names or feudal names are also not accepted. So things like the Imperial Garden District.
Palace as well. Even the term palace is...
Coral Palace. And guess what? I Googled Imperial Garden. And there's about 20 Chinese restaurants in Kuala Lumpur called Imperial Garden. I mean, it's such a common name. Why are you clamping down on that?
But that's the thing. We were laughing about this, right? I mean, and that's the stage that we all want to get into. I mean, we all have some certain, you know, tragic past. Every single country has them. And we try and move past it. We engage the issue, as we move along as a society. And first, you know, it's okay to just accept that something had happened, but the ideal level is when you can crack a joke out of it, and that's when it's when we have learned our lesson and we won't allow it to repeat, and it just became a funny point in history, I guess.
But then we've also done something very similar, right? Because we had a long colonial history, and we had a lot of roads and areas that were named after figures from that colonial past. So, for example, there used to be a Gurney Road in KL, as well as in, I think, two other states. I think it might have been Perak. I can't remember the other one. Obviously, Gurney Drive in Penang. And Jalan Gurney, of course, was renamed. And I remember a long time ago, my grandfather was very upset about the name change, because he had high respect for Henry Gurney at the time. So he said that it was a crying shame, essentially, that changing the name, although, yes, okay, maybe you want to reflect a more Malaysian sentiment, so you use a more Malaysian name, but it felt to him like we were erasing history and erasing that person from history. And from, so I guess there is an element to, if you want to address things like, okay, naming a hotel the Vienna Hotel just to maybe capitalize on the romantic image of Vienna, that's one thing. But when it comes to changing the names of, for example, roads that have been named after historical figures, I think there is a difference to be drawn there as well.
So I don't know whether or not I am completely against changing names, for an example, because sometimes it's supposed to reflect the community that you live in. I mean, for an example, we have Kerinci, Kampung Kerinci, and how it has been named to Bangsa South. Now, of course, that's a corporate move. It wasn't a government move at first, right? But of course, again, you'd expect that businesses would understand their surrounding and whether or not they know their target audience. But, I mean, community-wise, in that area, it's still Kampung Kerinci, and they still hold dearly to that name. Unless you have an entire buy-in that they're okay with the name Bangsa Sound, they see a commercial benefit, or even, and maybe just putting a sign that it used to be Kampung Kerinci, then so be it.
It's gone back to being Kampung Kerinci, actually.
Well, some portion.
Except for the commercial part, right?
That's right.
And yeah, because when you just change the name from Kampung Kerinci to Bangsasao, you kind of whitewash the whole history. And Kampung Kerinci has a long legacy. It's been around for, I think, almost 100 years. And the MP of that constituency, that was one of his promises that he would actually bring back the name.
Yeah.
So kudos to him. But in KL, we do like to change names. I mean, even like Jalan Duta has been changed, Jalan Ipoh, but we still refer to them by their own names,
but
isn't it?
If people want it, then that's fine. But when it's this government wanting to, you know, because of political correctness, without even consulting, like you said, your grandfather had a very strong attachment to the name Henry Gurney. And if everybody shares the same opinion, I believe that, hey, don't meddle with it.
Well, let us know what you think. Is a name important? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, the Eagles with Already Gone and then the 6:30 news. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Talk of the Town by The Pretenders. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Sharitz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. Now, have you ever read the news and been a little fed up with all the negativity? I mean, that happens to me. Every so often, though, you do find a nice story of Malaysians making a name for themselves in the international arena. And one of those is Siti Nur Afaf Ismail. She's a 21-year-old architecture student at University of Malaya, and she's the first Asian woman to win the Reba Norman Foster Travelling Scholarship. So she'll be shadowing two big names in architecture to look into disaster relief.
Yes, so kudos to her. 21-year-old, a lot to look forward to. And I think, yeah, this is, I mean, Malaysian, I mean, this is my opinion, we have all the right ingredients to really go international. Number one, a lot of us speak English. English is our second language, and that takes us quite far, and that could take us quite far. Second, we're diverse. I mean, we have many different races and multiracial, and we can adapt really well in other countries. It's just that the idea of being international is that one stumbling block is money, and which is something that we don't have, because you got to participate, you got to be engaged, you got to be present sometimes. And again, you know, if you want to do business abroad, you want to promote, it takes a lot of money. So but nevertheless, I'm all for us going away from being jago kampung, you know.
Actually, she's not the only one. I mean, because of her, I actually looked online to see all the other Malaysians who have won many different awards. And Zainal Anwar, she's been awarded like Harvard Law International Women's Day Portrait Exhibit Honoree. I mean, she was honored for her outstanding work as an activist fighting for women's rights. She co-founded Sisters of Islam. There is Rupa Shamugam. She is Buffalo's Niagara's Chapter Woman in Leadership Honoree. She's honored because she did a lot of work in STEM, S-T-E-M, which is Science, Technology, Engineering and Mathematics. So, you know, there are a lot of Malaysians out there who fly our flag proudly, but we don't seem to know very much about them, do we?
No, I don't think in terms of coverage, I feel like these are one of those things that they come out in one news article maybe, and then it gets buried by everything else, you know, political drama and everything. But I feel like it would be well worth the time and the reading space to talk more about these kinds of people, because these are the ones who are putting Malaysia's name out there, right? We complain so much about the fact that we are not very good at marketing ourselves to other countries and onto an international audience. But these are the kinds of people that we should be putting forward and promoting to get that name out there. There was another recent award. So a Malaysian, Queen Elizabeth II, bestowed a Malaysian with an appointment as Member of the Order of Australia, which is awarded in conjunction with her birthday. And that is Australia's Springfield City Group Chairman and Founder, Maha Sinathamby, for his work on the award, multi-award-winning even, Springfield City. And this is something that I guess for me also speaks a little bit about the architecture industry, because that's a very fascinating industry and it is growing with all the new technological advancements that we see coming up. Like, for example, I think...
smart city.
Yeah, smart cities, there you know, you green technology, how we're incorporating sustainable living into actual building concepts. Those are all things that I do believe Malaysia is on the forefront of. But again, we don't really seem to talk much about it.
Exactly, like the smart tunnel. I mean, not many Malaysians or not many people... Actually, it's what's really ironic is not a lot of Malaysians, but a lot of non-Malaysians know about the smart tunnel through that Discovery Channel documentary, which featured this, you know, a Malaysian company drilling.
I've seen it.
You saw it, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing, the engineering feat. I mean, you when you drive through it, you kind of doesn't dawn on you how sophisticated the tunnel
it's
is.
It's a tunnel mm-hmm. and a drainage system.
At
how amazing
time,
is that,
right?
It avoids it saves Kuala Lumpur from, you know, flash floods and so forth. I mean, that's amazing. But I mean, you raised a good point earlier. Sorry, Lin. I was going to say Xiao Ning, but Lin was the one who brought up the point. Is that you know, we've been talking a lot about how we're shifting towards the 21st century, mm-hmm. right? And there's a lot of changes, climate change and so forth. And we at the same time, jobs are going to shift. I mean, we yep. hear complaints about how people in the, for example, in the plastic industry would start losing their jobs and so forth. But at the same time, there are a lot of opportunities with these changes. And we have, you know, these people spearheading it, for example, you know, looking at opportunities in smart cities, for example, helping disaster management when we are facing a lot of disasters these days, especially with floods because of, you know, again, change of climate. So again, is this where the government could afford to put a lot of emphasis on this and put, you know, put us in the forefront in the world and develop this industry?
Actually, guys, have you ever seen the Selangor State Development Corporation building? It's really.
I have now.
Yes. Well, okay. Because I've put up a lovely picture of it on our screen, and it's actually a very interesting building, and it won two international awards at the Dubai Cityscape Global in 2017 for commercial project awards as well as sustainability, and that was a really fascinating building to look into in terms of its architecture. And I spoke. I think it was 2 years ago now, but you can still find the podcast on the BFM app or on the BFM website. We spoke about this on the property show, how they had incorporated green design and sustainability, and how they went through the process of getting their certifications from on the Green Building Index, for example. So that was a very interesting conversation and just illustrating how Malaysia is getting into the sustainability business in terms of architecture. But you know what? Let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a couple of messages coming up for you after this and then some more discussions. So stay tuned at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that's Don't Stand So Close to Me by The Police, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Sharitz and Xiao Ning. Thank you so much for your messages this morning. We've had a couple of tweets and WhatsApps. We've been talking about interesting things. We've been talking about the Facebook like button. We've talked about what's in a name as well as Malaysians winning awards overseas. Now, we've got a tweet here from Michael who was weighing in on the Facebook like button discussion, and we asked, would you get rid of it? And he said, add a dislike button. That looks better.
That sounds fair.
Will your friends talk to you again anymore after that?
Oh, but all you want is validation, right?
Oh, but this is the opposite of validation, right?
I mean,
Sharitz, I mean, how does I don't like your cake, I don't like your picture make you feel better?
I mean, there is a little angry face reaction that you can choose now too. So maybe that's...
Yeah, how is that different to dislike, right?
I guess it's a little bit more like you're not talking, you're not saying, it doesn't feel so targeted that you are disliking what the person posts. You're just saying that it made you feel angry. I don't know. I've never used it. What else do we have,
Ro? Okay, so we have a WhatsApp from Ro. Good morning, Ro. I still call it Batu Road, and alternate between Bukit Tengku and Kenny Hills. But Federal Hills will always be just that because that's where I was born.
Yeah, and Angie also tweeted in. She says, please leave our road names alone. It erases our history.
Yeah, KY Ho also said, it's sad when a road name connected to history is replaced with another historic name. It's tragic when it's replaced with something inconsequential. Ah, like Jalan Vening for Jalan Perdana or something like that. The more they change historic road names, the more the city becomes an old man with dementia. I quite like that description, actually.
Old man with dementia.
Yeah, because you are forgetting your history, right? Mm. So when you he has a point. If you replace it, if you replace one historic name with another historic name, okay, you know, there is a reason for it, presumably, behind the choice of that name. But when you just choose something that sounds nice, like Jalan Harmony, for example, then there's no more meaning to it.
But is that the only way you can retain history, though? Is it by the, you know, by the road name? Or can you have like a memorial sort of park, or, you know, just to educate people as in as to where this, you know, how the name has evolved? For example, again, if a community has changed, whether or not does that justify a change of name?
But if you keep that name, right, then it is actually an opportunity to tell people the history of the place and its communities versus a very generic name like Jalan Harmony.
Yeah, and I think it's Jalan Harmony was an example. I have no idea if there's an actual road called Jalan Harmony. But I feel like a memorial statue, for example, would be a good idea. But I also think that retaining the names of certain roads, it keeps it within the collective consciousness, right? Because when you're saying, it's the difference between having to make an effort to go towards that monument or that statue or that award. And it is telling someone, oh, I'm going to Jalan Gurney. And then you start a conversation about why it's called that. So it's a lot more accessible for me to have road names with actual meanings rather than changing the name perhaps and then putting a memorial statue there. Not that that necessarily is a bad idea, but I would personally prefer to retain the original name of the road, for example.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. At the same time, we also have a WhatsApp from Hassan. This is with regards to our accomplishment abroad. And since we're talking about the subject of architecture, and that's what she, you know, that's what, yeah, so that was the center of the subject. One area he would like to see us win an award is design for low-cost housing, like the PPR housing. That would, you know, be a feat and great to be known for, resolving the plight of the poor. So, I mean, that's something that I'd like to see, at least. You know, we have a lot. It's a tough call, isn't it, about the PPR?
Yeah, it is.
Because it's already there. So how, you know, that the problem is, it's already there. So what's the solution? How can we improve it? I mean, that's fascinating for me.
Yeah, I think that is very much a question that the government as well as our developers are looking for an answer for at the moment. Thank you so much for your messages this morning. We're coming up on the 7 o'clock news with Keith Kam and then the business end of the morning run. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But first, here's Electric Light Orchestra with I'm Alive, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.